Don't forget to suck some titties.
I have less motivation than ever to get a job. I am starting to have that bum-ass mindset. I'm not going to lie to you. Am I going to stick with it? No. But you know what I will say? I've learned over this process. I've been unemployed for almost 2 months now. And I'll be very frank with you. You know, I've gone through phases of applying for jobs, but you know, it's really, the more you are out of it, you realize how stupid this cycle of life we have created. Not the importance of having a job and everything it does for you and all that good stuff, the structure, the purpose. But that's the problem. Our purpose is destined based off what is offered to us, not some we seek out in most cases. It really is this unnatural way of living. And I hate to be this ungrateful, you know, pig out here, you know, this bum. But I'm going to be honest with you, like, it's really hard to, like, want to go back into that life. Because you're just doing it so you can pretend to dream of something bigger. You put some money aside to pursue one thing. Like, it really is just this vicious cycle of, you know, it just really ain't, it really ain't all that. We do have this glorification of homelessness, which is odd. You know, I was watching some earlier where there's these people living in the Las Vegas tunnels. And a guy who went out there to interview them, and now people are profiting off their pain and shit, which is also another story for another day. And there is this, he was asked, you know, in an interview, like, what percentage of them do you think are unhappy? He said, well, 100% of them are unhappy on a baseline level. And I would say, yeah, 100% of them are probably unhappy. And I think it's probably for different reasons than people think. Obviously, every situation is different. I will say that I think a lot of there is unhappiness to accept that this is it. Whatever your accepted state of that point in your life. And so when you got to that point, you just accept this is it. But there's also a relieving factor of that. You know, you kind of accept that high, you know, aspirations of some are probably out the window. It's hard to get a job when you live in the tunnel. you know. You just got to have tunnel vision. That's what they say. You just got to have tunnel vision and have a vision and all that good shit. I will say, you know, not to get off top, but back to the point. You know, I really see that it's really this 9-to-5 job cycle is, I understand why people feel insecure when people, you know, are, they have this perception of how people perceive them for not having a job, being unemployed. There's this weird perception of it. I think a lot of that is a lot of people out of anger, like, man, you know, I wish I could just quit my job. You know, there is some, I wish I could quit my job, because there are people that can financially quit them job, but the perception of them potentially losing their inner circle, losing friends, losing a partner, losing respect from people they care about would dwindle, and that would be too much for them to handle. I think one thing about me, you have to be built, you have to be built different for this unemployed life, you know? It's kind of a fucked up, you know, they say, you know, you will find ways to rationalize the way you live. You will find ways to rationalize your incompetency by putting somehow what you do on a pedestal and tearing down others. And I'm not doing that. What I am saying is, I think unemployment's not for everyone, man. It is interesting. You see a lot of people praise you at first, and then over time you start kind of seeing like how people really see you, how people really view you. A lot of people think you're just wasting your time doing X, Y, and Z, and that's okay. And that just comes with the territory. Yeah, I don't know why that was on my mind. Yeah, I just see a lot. We have this heavy obsession. We have this heavy intrigue with people getting laid off. I saw a video of this, you know, this lady. She did a remote tech job. I just got to tell you, if you are remote, you are probably one of the easiest people to lay off. There's no barrier of entry. They just have to do a Zoom call, send you an email, say we have to talk. Put all your severance in email. Everything you need to access is online. You have to come to the office. There's no barrier of entry. So that's the thing people got to be careful of. Like, everyone wanted to work at home and remote and stuff, and that's all great and all. It also makes it where it's easier to fire your ass too. And not really have to have that real conflict. You know, it's really hard to make your point over a Zoom call that someone just press the red button and it's over, you know. Yeah, being a bum is great. I'm starting to understand why people are like, I understand, like, when you hear the people, I used to always be like, how are you unemployed for 6 months? It's not that hard. And look, it's for some of us, it's not that it's hard to get. Like, I could apply for a specific type of job next week and start in a week after. Like, you know. You can always typically get something as long as you know you can not shit your pants on the first day. But it's that, man, you know, I enjoy living a life, but then you have to ask yourself, how much longer can I live this life? You know, funds run out. Then you start getting into the easy money hack, right? That you don't have time to think about when you are working all the time. Like, you start thinking, oh, the stuff that you just do on your computer, you know? You just do stocks, trading, multi-level marketing, selling. You start doing the stuff that's just all on a computer that you think just takes a couple hours. Like, I was going to start day trading today, for example, right? Because I had a friend tell me about it. And I woke up late. I was like, you know what? I'll probably start it tomorrow. I'm going to like really do more research, create an account, you know, really put a decent amount of funds or really get a good starting point, understand what the fuck I'm doing. And I went online today. I'm like, you know, day trading, you know, you think about what it is. You are basically manipulating stock, high this, sell, buy. You're like, something about this doesn't feel legal. I go online, is day trading illegal? It says, no, it's not illegal, but your account will be tracked whether it's a day trading and, you know, a long-term regular trading brokerage account. Now they get too in the weeds, and I'm not an expert. This is literally just some 30-minute, hour-long of looking around shit. The SEC identifies day trading as if you make X amount of like 4 to 5 transactions in a 5-day period. Basically, if you were to make a trade a day, like put in a stock and then sell it before that day ends, that day period ends, that's a day trade. If you were to put a stock in the beginning of the day, but then like early the next day, it wouldn't be a technical day trade, but it's still marked as something and blah, blah, blah. But to be marked as a day trading account, you have to have a minimum equity of $25,000. And I'm like, you know, this is the stuff your friends don't tell you. And I'm like, oh, because what if I would have went out there, made a couple cool trades, like, oh man, I'm making a few $100 profit today. And then next thing you know, 4 days in, E-Trade is like, hey, we're freezing your account. Like, it literally said, they'll just freeze your fucking account. If you are monitored in this and they transition your account to another, but then you have to have a minimum amount of equity to, that you got to put into the account just to cover their hedges. It's like, oh, this is kind of weird. You know, you got to have money just to even lose money, you know? It's like, hey, can I just lose money like the rest of society? Put $5, think you're going to win 200, baby? Like, come on. And that's the thing, you know, you start having too much. Like, what are easy ways to make? Like, you know what? If I could learn, if I just had the time to learn some stocks, why the fuck couldn't I? Then it's like, oh, you don't know shit. And, you know, what if you start gaining momentum, you start making money, and then they freeze your account, some out of your fucking control. And you don't have enough money to even start, boom. Because that would be the best. Like, honestly, if you were able to day trade the stock market, I don't even know if that's a legal job. Like, it feels like, honestly, like, it feels like there would be a lot of people doing this. And there's a good amount out there. You could find them. But it's not their only job, right? So it's almost like, okay. It shows like, it's almost like if you were a professional gambler. Like going to casinos and shit. Which also, by the way, like, you know that casinos are rigged and all this shit, whatever. I've been watching this YouTube channel called, I think the name is Stephen Bridges. It's like this Australian guy. Him and his group of friends, he calls themselves like card counters, right? So card counting is apparently illegal, which is one of the dumbest things ever because there's only so many cards in a deck. So by default, if you just play long enough, cards are going to run out in some of these games. It's not really card counting. Like, so am I just supposed to pretend I don't know these last five cards are going to either be queen, king, a four, and all this shit? Like, am I just supposed to pretend that... But it's stupid, right? Now, look, I'm not a professional, so any professional card counters in there, wipe my ass with your queen. your queen's known to do it. Lock lips. The ace of spades, because AC... Dick C. I'm such a fool. That was bad. But, highway to hell. But they are card counters. They go to what they do. So, and I know, I went to a casino one time. I don't know if I ever told the story, but quick story. On like literally the first 10 minutes, I did one of these big old slots. This big old mega, you pull the thing down, the Wheel of Fortune, and I won over $800. I'm like, holy shit, bro. Like, that was like 2 weeks of pay working 50 hours a week at my job at the time, you know? Like, I was like, holy shit. And guess what? I lost almost all of it the rest of the night. Because that's what they do. First of all, you sign up for a player card. And I was like, this is kind of odd. I've never heard of something like this. And now thinking about it, looking back, they have your ID and player card, so you keep track of your wins. And I think it's to keep track to see if you're losing the casino money, making money, track any weird activity type of shit. So not only that casino, but you go, because all these casinos work together, because at the end of the day, they don't want people making money off of them, making them look like a fool. So... these card counters, quote unquote, they play like legitimate card games. And they'll go kind of like New Mexico, California. They try to avoid Vegas, but they do at times. Like they recently went to one in Louisiana. Like they go all over, you know, the country and stuff like that. And they try to, now they're at the point where they have to kind of like wear masks, wear makeup, keep their identity kind of on the down low to avoid being caught. But what you notice very quickly is no matter where they go, at every like main card table, they have like a manager on top of the card dealer. And the card dealer is literally in charge of when they suspect someone is good at the game, they call them over for them to monitor. And then they start winning. They literally call them to the side and tell them that, and they literally tell them, I'm going to have to back you off, but you could play anything else in here. And they'll have them on these secret cameras that they're wearing. Yeah, look, you're just too good at this. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it's unreal. Like, they won't even be, like, hiding it. They're like, hey, my job is to, you know, keep a business going. It's like, bro, you're probably getting paid. Like, imagine working at a casino. And your job is to maintain the casino, making a shitload of money. And they're probably like, yeah, here's $60,000. Like, I'm sorry. Unless you're paying me, you know, some premium dollar, I'm letting these motherfuckers win. I'm sorry. And it's insane because there was an instance, this guy tried to cash out. They were already suspecting that he was good or whatever. He basically won like $4,000 or something, right? He was trying to cash out. They wouldn't let him cash out because he didn't have a player card, but legally they can't do that. A player card is really just, they ask you, but they can't really make you. And you don't have to really reveal your ID to get your money. Like, it's not technically the law if you won, but it's their policy they'll try to hide, but it's not really legal law. But it is insane. Like, it's transparent, blatant. These casinos, these gambling, no one is really going to win money there. Like, these can say, like, literally, if you just start winning money, that's a problem for them. And they can make all the excuses, make it a pain in the ass to pay you out. But if they were to manipulate you, rig the games for you and shit like that, you were to spend money you don't have, they're not giving that money back. They're going to kick your ass out and then ban you for X, Y, and Z. But they'll take your money. You bet your sweet bibbity. It's crazy. And it all kind of ties back to, you know, vices are really when we think there's an easy way to make money than the traditional route. When it's the easy way to feel good than doing the hard stuff. Like, the easy thing is to drink alcohol. The easy thing is, do drugs, smoke weed and stuff to feel loose, inebriated, to feel relaxed, to not deal and to cope with your problems. When the hard thing would be to just accept your existence, accept things about yourself that aren't great, be able to, you know, compartmentalize and not take everything so serious all the time. And kind of going back to this, like, you know, the easy thing is like, oh, I can make a couple $100 online today, you know, day trading crypto. I can make a couple hundred in the stock market. Oh, I could sell this, you know, I could, you know, manipulate something and make some money. I could go gamble and just put a couple bucks in, and I might win a few $100, you know. And I did nothing. The easier something is to do, it manipulates us to think that there's an easier way to reach some goal we have. And you may win in the short term, but you won't appreciate the long term because it didn't really feel like you did much. So that's kind of like the battle, you know. But I think it's important to do these things and maybe go bankrupt. You know, go for broke. Who gives a fuck? Sometimes you have to be like, fuck it. I'm going to the bottom. Now we're here. Oh, Drake. You know, I'm not going to lie. Last night in the halftime show, I know I did a whole Super Bowl reaction. Go check that out. Episode 326. I was kind of like, what if they made the what if Kendrick and Drake made like the craziest reunite behind the scenes, and then Drake just pops out and they just start like, he starts singing the song Not Like Us and then switches to like his old diss tracks, you know? And they played it back to back. I think Back to Back is from 2015. I think it's literally like 10 years old. Shit's crazy. But it that's really the I was like, I know it's not gonna happen, but how fucking cool would that be? Like in the weirdest way. People are booing Taylor Swift, you know. I guess Ice Spice, she wanted the best of both worlds, and now she found out what it's like to be Hannah Montana. But yeah. It's fun out here though. Yeah, passing so much gas these days. Oh god, that smells. Whew. You know, they say podcasting is a thriving business. I think it is a really, your podcast is either booming or it's dooming, you know? Because, you know, I admit, like, my podcast has hit a lot of, you know, a decent amount of fluctuations. At first, it was pretty, you know, like any podcast that first starts with no promotion. It was pretty, you know, not many people, right? Then I hit a wave where I was getting, like, I had a couple episodes that popped, like, thousands downloads per episode, which was pretty cool. And now it's kind of regressed back over time because I kind of did an image change. I changed. I wasn't as consistent with it. And it is really cool to be in a new season. You know, oh God, I'm already starting to sound like one of them people. You know, you got to enter your new season to change or nothing will change, you know. If you fly with the weather, the weather will fly away from you. And you're just like, shut the fuck up. But, you know, I think it's important to embrace change. And, yeah, embrace it. Embrace. Embrace debate. I actually, you know, I wrote this topic down weeks and weeks ago, but, you know, there's been stuff coming up, stuff, but I had this thing, and I wanted to do a more in-depth research about it, but, you know, I was like, you know what, it seems like now's the right time to talk about something, so I literally wrote down my notes, right? Max Kellerman, going off ESPN First Take, you know, there's been many iterations of First Take. There was the Skip Bayless cold pizza version where it was like him, I think Rob Parker and Jalen Rose and Dana Jacobson and Jay Crawford as the host. I remember, and then there was the second iteration where it became like a little bit more of First Take where it was, it became basically, I don't know why they would have two hosts. It was kind of weird at the time. But it became Jay Crawford as a host. And then it was in between Skip and then Rob Parker. And then Stephen A. took over eventually. Then when it was Stephen A., Skip, Jay Crawford as a host, it was cool. And somewhere along the line, you know, I think the host changed here and there. I don't know if that's when they went to Molly Kiram. I felt like there was someone in between, but I can't remember. But once Skip left for FS1, right? This was probably like 9-10 years ago, it feels like. Max Kellerman became the second main co-host of Stephen A. after a period of time. And to be honest, the Stephen A. Max Kellerman was, I believe, the best version of First Take to date. Because I feel like after when they started phasing Max out, you saw the whole culture of not just First Take, but really ESPN change. It really became about screaming, Hot Topic, and more about the being wildly short attention span entertaining without the deep backdrop, or I don't even say knowledge, but at least Max always brought like a perspective that regardless if you agreed or not, he added a legitimate value and perspective that took time and attentiveness to his takes. And he had a good sense of humor where he could go back and forth when things were, you know, not so serious to serious. To me, that Max Kellerman and Stephen A. is the best version of First Take to date. I know Skip put it on the map. Not taking away anything he did, without him there would be no First Take. But the most like mature, resolved, with entertainment, Max and Stephen A. They really balance each other well. Like if you really look at the dynamics of it. And Stephen A., obviously, after years, wanted him out. Now, there are reports and, well, not even reports. He's flat out saying, yeah, I wanted him off the show. I felt like the show would be better without. He basically wanted to make himself the star. And until they got Shannon Sharp on there, and Shannon Sharp's only on there like twice a week, I think. And even before they got Shannon Sharp, like, it was Stephen A. and a bunch of random people day by day. And that sounds great, but it also made it where no one wanted to return, continue watching the show because it just wasn't like, people want to know what they're tuning into every day. Like, I know Stephen A. is going to be here, but honestly, if the guests can very, very depend on who comes back, it does not make the show more interesting. When you fall, I wouldn't say in love with a personality, but when you get into the rhythm of a dynamic between two people, that's what you come back for. Like, you'll listen to two people debate each other about anything. You don't have to rely on the subject matter being the most topical for people to come listen to you. That's when you know, like, people actually care about you and your perspective. I think that's what we're all trying to strive for people that do this. You want to be able where you talk about anything you want, where it's not so topical, where it's not trending, and people, you at least have a fan base that will come and at least want to hear what you have to say about it. They wait for what your opinion has to say about it. I think, in my opinion, I think, now there is a racial component, you know, people made it where it felt like Max had more respect from the black community than Stephen A., which is a very touchy subject. You know, there was some political stuff on there that Max Sibley had a specific type of point of view, and then Stephen A. didn't agree, and he alienated some people, you know, in his fan base potentially, and that kind of turned people off. And then the Terrell Owens thing is, I think, what really like put it on black. Max never like made it like he was trying to be something he's not. Like, you look in the background, like, he's from, you know, he's from New York. I don't remember if he's from New York or New Jersey, but he's from, like, deep, like, the city. Like, he actually was a rapper at one point. He grew up, you know, in that type of culture and environment. So, but he didn't even try to act like what you would perceive someone who's trying to appease, you know, a culture or anything like that. Like, that's, he never did, like, he actually felt authentic in the stuff he's saying. I think that's why people respected Max. And I think that intimidates Stephen A. because he wanted people that couldn't intellectually match up with him. He wanted to keep the show surface level. I believe that the whole goal of all this was to keep First Take surface level, to keep it about sound bites, yelling. And I don't remember the recent, but I don't even think First Take is number one on their own network anymore. Like, Stephen A is still the king of ESPN. That's not the point we're making here. But the show itself is very diluted at this point. Like, even when Shannon Sharpe's on, like, if we could be honest, we're going to be really, really honest about it. First Take with Stephen A and Shannon Sharpe has been pretty underwhelming. Not saying they're not great, but it does not feel like the type of show that we thought we were getting. It feels a lot more stripped back. Like, Shannon Sharpe does not act as loose and with all, like, the entertainment sayings. I know he's on ESPN, so he's got to be a little bit held back in certain ways, but it almost seems like he's reserving his whole personality, his whole entertainment for his own show, Club Shay Shay and Nightcap. It feels like that's more of where you will get the entertaining Shannon Sharpe that people fell in love with on Undisputed. Like, Undisputed with Shannon Sharpe and Skip Bayless was the second the show was being aired on. There were already people, you know, some, you know, South Korea, you know, server posting their clips illegally on YouTube. And we'd be eating that shit up. Like, 20 minutes after they have a segment, that shit's on the internet. No one's fucking doing that. No one in a third world country is clip farming Undisputed these days. No one gives a fuck. Undisputed's not even a thing anymore. No one's doing that for Speak. No one's even doing that for Get Up. First Take, you'll see a few here and there, but it's not every morning talking about every topic type of thing. Like, the appeal isn't there. So, I think First Take died when Max was kicked off the show. It's been a very underwhelming, it's not the same splash as, like, the hire of Shannon Sharpe. Like, oh, Shannon Sharpe and Stephen A is going to be some unreal. Like, you watch, like, I'm thinking, okay, Super Bowl reaction, one of the biggest times of the year for these shows. And it was pretty tame. Like, oh, you know, Jalen Hurts, you know, he really went out there, did some, he had that one pick. It was very, like, there's no personality. It seems like they're trying to, the appeal of it has not lived up to the hype, is what I'm saying. So, kind of going back of how that all ties in, is I think when we went into this direction of trying to be hot takey without the substance and entertainment, when everything is just about yelling at each other, everything's becoming about some racial attachment, and there's application to that in the stuff they talk about, but a lot of times it just feels like when they run out of any decent intellectual points, or they don't even want to go through the work of creating an interesting point of view, they just attach to that, and then they have the sympathetic card towards it. And I'm basically talking about, like, Ryan Clark when it comes to a point. Like, I like, you know, I think he's fine. I don't have anything against him personally. You know, I don't even, there are times when, you know, the racial stuff is important. But, you know, the stuff with, like, oh, I think it's like if Lamar doesn't win MVP, it's like, well, he's won twice. You know, I love Lamar. I mean, I would have been mad if he won it this year, but, you know, there was plenty of other good candidates this year too. Josh Allen was a pretty worthy candidate. Me personally, Saquon Barkley probably should have been more of a person who should have won it. And that's a bigger issue in terms of voting and stuff. But for me personally, I just, you know, I think Max Kellerman, I don't know if you guys remember, but, like, on the most serious topics, even stuff that ESPN probably, like, a lot of fans didn't like when they talked about, if you look back at, like, the clips and the segments, like, Max Kellerman is typically the most well-thought-out person. And here, like, if you were going in with a complete no opinion about something, and it was between Stephen A., Max, and whoever third guest they had, whatever the subject are, you would probably say Max Kellerman came the most prepared. Max Kellerman is able to navigate the conversation in places that most people wouldn't and couldn't. He is very good at talking and very good at really getting to the point and the core issue a lot of times. And not just focus on the stupid, oh, it's all about championships. I don't want to hear nothing when you've lost four of your last five games against this team. Like, you know, and, you know, you could make the argument, and maybe this was Stephen A's point of view, if I had to be fair, that not everything has to be philosophical. Like, this is entertainment TV. But at the same time, Max was filling in a missing piece that I think we miss dearly now. Because all these shows is just a lot of, I'm going to be honest, like, I can't stand LeSean McCoy. I can't stand, like, I respect him as a player. But it doesn't even feel like he's gotten out of, when they do their broadcasting and TV training, it literally looks like he's still like a player when they're doing stuff mid-season or on a bye week or in the playoffs when their team didn't make the playoffs and they're just giving him some practice. Like, it really still looks like he's like not been trained, like in TV. Like, there's no flow to his thing. Everything's about what he's got to say. He's focused on being a hype man and all this stuff. And it's like, bro, relax. You're next to Chase Daniel. Let's relax. Even Emmanuel Acho is like, all right, man, can we relax here? You notice how Emmanuel Acho, he's not doing the whole thing he did with Marcellus of trying to be like the old, you know, these preacher and trying to get deep. Because we're going to get in Marcellus. Let's do it. And Marcellus and Emmanuel, to me, that was one of my favorite duos. Their conversations and their point of views on things. Even if sometimes it got a little too deep in the weeds, but it always felt like they had something for each other. And they could like talk about something, you still be engaged. Regardless of whether you believe in what Acho and all that stuff, they were entertaining, they worked well together. But similar to Emmanuel Acho, I think he saw what Stephen A did with Max, and he said, no, I got to be the biggest star of this show. What did he do? Started getting Troy Taylor's cheeks. but he started, and I don't think he directly, like, I want Marcellus fired. But he definitely made some insinuations and moves in the back. Like, he wasn't mad that Marcellus was getting let go. Or that he didn't get re-signed to his contract, whatever happened in that situation, which is still ongoing for the Charlie Dixon situation, but neither here nor there. We still see he wanted that rotating cast of people that can't really compete with him. So he can always seem like the biggest dog in a small kennel. Or he could be, you know, what was it called? The, you know, big tree in a small fish. What the fuck is it saying? When you're big in a small, big fish in a small pond, whatever it is. He wanted to not only be the big fish in the small pond, but take over the ponds all around the city too, you know? And when you get greedy like that, and you don't have to be, there's not that competitiveness every day. There's not that thing that, there's not that person that you're competing with to be more articulate, to have a point of view, to have a perspective. You could come in with your same bland point of views and just regurgitate the shit, and you're going to keep the show going. But when you have to keep up with a Marcellus, or you have to keep up with a Max, which ironically come back together, because if you don't remember, Marcellus and Max, kind of after the reiteration of Colin and Michelle Beadle leaving Sports Nation, they kept that Sports Nation shit going, and they made it a really good show. They had a really good dynamic, and they're really good friends, as far as I know, at least great business partners, you know. So it's kind of weird how it all works. You see the direction of sports TV. You see the direction of what a consumer wants. And when you get into that consumerism mindset, your point of views become very dumbed down. When you have no competition across and you debating what you're doing, everything becomes dumbed down. And when you're dumb, you're dumb though. I'm a fool. But it's all right. I could cut it out. So you can. Yeah. Edit here. But I'm kidding. It's all staying in.
You ain't fooling nobody.
Yeah. Nah, but you know, that's the thing when, and it's more than just sports media. It's like all television is the same, which is why there's no interest in anything. No one gives a fuck about what Sonny Huston's corrupt, you know, doctor has in place for us. You know, running insurance fraud. Yeah, they want you to pay for insurance just so they can use it as fraud. And funny how that works. It's always the damn plastic surgeons, even though their wife looks like they need it. she got the wrong view, if you know what I'm saying. I'm just kidding. She's not a bad looking woman. Just her personality. ugly. It's ironic her name's Sunny, but her personality is muggy. More like soggy. Soggy blue waffles. I love disgusting the people around me. But no, you know what? Hey, you know what? When you know about your husband's operation of running a fraud, whole fraud circle, and then you want to sit here and lecture people about morality, and you know that shit's going on, I have no bones to pick with you. It's always the people that are on these big television corporations talking about, you know, oh, you know, Bernie Madoff's terrible. And then you find out that their husband is manipulating the stock market when they're a public government official, Nancy Pelosi. And, I don't see any problem with knowing insider information, as your husband has a crazy success rate in the stock market, like 5 times, like actually it's like 20 times above what the success rate of the average person with average information would know. Like, it's pretty insane. But hey, where are the assholes supposed to fund, you know, insurance for them, right? And speaking of United Healthcare, there's a situation with United Healthcare, not to beat a dead horse, because, you know, someone already got beaten. But apparently, there's this thing going around, you know, this issue. There was a surgeon, she was doing surgery on an individual, I guess with United Healthcare. But it's kind of scary because I had United Healthcare. If I would have surgery, chances are they would probably cancel my plan if I was getting surgery and not tell you till after you get out that, hey, we don't cover this. But in the middle of surgery, they call her. And I don't know if they were trying to get the legalities of what's going on, whether to do it or not. Don't do it. We're not going to cover it. Basically threatened, we're not going to cover it. And this is the type of shit that we are dealing with these people. They want you to feel empathetic towards these companies. And I'm not rationalizing what happened to the guy. I'm not. Because, you know, going out of your way to do all that, he's just a figurehead at the end of the day. He's just following protocol of the culture. You know, he didn't create the policies, but he certainly knows about them, you know. But that doesn't mean people should go around assassinating the guy. But you know, that's where you got to ask yourself, you know, moral compass. Because there are people that claim, and let's be honest, money and greed, it corrupts people. And it's not always in the blatant ways, right? It's sometimes you realize you are so far deep into something, and by the time you realize you're so far deep in that there are legal repercussions getting out of it, and there are financial, you're basically choosing a whole different life by not choosing to be a part of something. And sometimes you turn a blind eye because it's doing well for your family, you know? And people do all the time. People do immoral things to put food on the table or to enhance their children's lives. You know, the same people that are shitting on the CEO for healthcare, they're the same ones that have family members that are dealing drugs and killing people, drowning people, you know, knocking people off, ruining parents who have addictions and kids they can't take care of by funding them drugs and funding them shit, but they get a benefit from it, but then they wouldn't act like they're holier than thou because someone on a CEO level is doing it. Just because you do it on a small level doesn't make it better. Like, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. I would rather be a bum that can't provide for their kids than to do it in an immoral way that leads a false impression of what I can do for them. Because if I have to hurt other people to take care of you, that's an issue and a compass, right? If you are hurting innocent people to put food on your table, there's something wrong about that. You need to reevaluate things you got going in your life before you start, you know, rationalizing. We live in this rationalizing culture where as long as, you know, we're bringing money home, as long as we're, you know, making X amount a week, we're doing good. We're doing our citizen duty. We're being a contributing member to society. When honestly, being honest about it, making a paycheck doesn't make you a contribution to society. Really, society probably loses money if you're making under a certain amount. We're being honest about it. And depending on what you're doing, you're probably hurting society more. Like, working at McDonald's, you're not helping society. You're killing people. You're not directly killing people. But you are basically handing them a poison burger. That's not even burger. It's got more plastic in it than Pamela Anderson's butt cheeks in the Tommy Lee video. good thing they did it by the ocean. The seals were going to die anyways. By the way, that seal commercial, Baja Blast, why they have to do it? You know, you don't have to ruin every legendary song. I almost felt bad. You know, that seal commercial with him and that Mountain Dew, it literally felt like he was being forced. Like, hey, man, you're going bankrupt. You need to do this commercial, sell the rights to this song. We're going to embarrass the fuck out of this song. And you're going to have to pretend to be on a boat with people you don't want to be with. He's like, copy that. But, you know, you really think about it. Not every job is serving a purpose, even if it's legal. It does for the individual. It does for that individual. But, you know, we have too many businesses as is. We have too many places. Too much competition. That's why businesses don't last. Now, more competition makes it where you have to be on top of your shit, because if you're not on top of it, they'll just go to another. But at the same time, it doesn't even give businesses the opportunity to get their shit right, because by the time they get it right, they're 80,000 in the hole and they're fucked. Which, you know, like, the worst business you go in these days is a restaurant. Like, a sit-down restaurant, unless it's commercialized, you're fucked. I hate to break it to you. You're literally doing it for the love of it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to open a business thinking, like, you're going to be, like, some multimillionaire, you literally have a better chance of being a multimillionaire gambling on Prize Picks. You know, I'm just going to be honest with you. Unless you just have so much capital to begin with, but that's not the case. Just so you know, when you make a business, it's not for you. The bank does not care about how well your business does. They want you to take money so that you're always at mercy to them. And you have a reason to be in line and fought with the bank system as we made it, where you have to qualify, like, you need permission. Think about how crazy it is. You could have $1 million of cash up front. A house could be worth $500,000. You could easily pay $500,000 up front, and they will still not approve you. It literally makes no sense. Because, oh, well, we need to track your, we need to make sure your credit, we got to see your history. It does not matter. I have $500,000 I could pay you right now and buy a whole nother house for $500,000 if I wanted to. And you're going to deny me for someone who has $400 in their account, but they have $10,000 in savings and they got 100 points higher on their credit score. It makes no fucking sense. It literally makes no fucking sense. But when we are reliant on these systems, they train you to kind of believe that you always need to borrow. You always need to make what you don't have. You always need more money. You always need to up this. You know, you need to get a credit card so you get 2% cash back. Like, no, you don't. You really don't. Even when you own a house, you don't own the fucking house. Like, you really break it down. Most, you don't even own the land that's on the house, because at any point you could pay a house off, pay off the land. Government could come to your house and say, hey, we're rezoning, we're building a whole commercial place here, we're going to, you know, we could buy it for a very, you know, a very generous price, but, you know, and then we could give you, you know, 1.5 to 2 times of what you paid or what the house is worth, so we can have this to build a PetSmart. And yeah, then you can go live your life wherever the hell you want. And but you don't have to take it, but then we're gonna, you know, sue you, you know, because we could convince that this is for the greater man of the community, when all you're doing is putting indoctrinated, you know, puppies. And yeah. That's what the community needs, more stray puppies. But yeah, that's the world we live in. But yeah, somehow I went from Max Kellerman on First Take to stray puppies, because I'm just one big stray pup. You know, I was thinking about this. One thing I do, you know, it was recently when I was on a consistent schedule, right? It was at my old job. And by my old job, I mean somehow I worked there for a week. But they would drive us out to a place. And it was the first time. Like, it was the first time that I was actually able to brainstorm without being interrupted, like for an hour plus, going into whatever neighborhood we were, the cell, whatever. It was like the only time all I do is sit in a vehicle, not have to worry about anything, listen to what I want, and I had the opportunity to just brainstorm and write down notes. And I literally wrote down, I remember this is the day I was in the van. You know, it was probably the day I got fired. And that's how life works. You know, you're like, you know, this is a pretty nice gig. And they're like, yeah, it is nice, just not for you. and I literally wrote down, because I wrote down this note. I could probably see the date too. But sometimes I write down these reminders to myself, like, hey, I'm literally using my pre-commute to think and brainstorm again. And I noticed what it did. Just having that 30 minutes to hour of just writing down stuff, your thoughts, whether it's a deep thought or not, literally on the surface, like, I'm literally sitting here and I'm thinking of things. Think about how crazy that is in today's world. You're just sitting there thinking of things, and that's a revelation to you. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, how many people take advantage of that opportunity? I was looking around. There was a lot of people drowning themselves in their phones, you know, vaping, and nothing wrong with that per se. But it's always people trying to artificially inseminate their mind and simulate their mood, their reception, their receptors, their vaginal receptors, their glands, their receptor glands, and their kidney. I don't know. But it was fascinating to me. I'm like, no one just sits around and just appreciates a thought anymore. You know, well, some appreciate thoughts, but, you know, T-H-O-T-S. Oh, Meg. She's a stallion. Yeah, we all have good thoughts in our head. But I was sitting there just thinking. And I'm like, this is the first time I've just been able to write an idea down. And really, like, feel like it was a normal time to write down an idea. Where I'm not in a rush to do nothing. I'm really just sitting there thinking. So, yeah. Speaking of thinking. Here's a hot take. And this is legitimate. I'm not just saying, like, this is a legitimate thought. I don't really think anyone's that mad about whoever is really the president. I think people care about who's the president based off how their peers or their close group of friends think about how they care about the president, right? You ever been around waiting in line somewhere and then someone is just sits there and they just make a comment about, huh, well, that's socialism. And you're like, bro, you're literally wearing a t-shirt off a merch you bought. What are you talking about, socialism? I don't think, most of people just be saying shit. Oh, well, that's capitalism. That's socialism. That's literally this libertarian. It's like, you don't even know, most people don't even know what this shit means. People literally just be watching Twitch streamers that debate Ben Shapiro once a year on these multi-debate platforms. And they just all of a sudden just, like, have this hot topic of politics and ways of social thinking. And you really just be going in public places and people just unnecessarily bring things that they know are going to cause. And then you're just like, hey man, like, I don't know. I don't really give a shit. They're like, oh, you don't care? Oh, well, dude, that's the problem. You don't care. It's like, no, I don't care talking about this with you. That's what I don't care about. There are people that I would be willing to get into this with, not with you, because it doesn't even seem like you know what the fuck you're talking about. Doesn't even seem like you know what the hell you're mad at, most importantly. Three, you don't even know what you would be happy with. Because regardless, these are people that are always unhappy with something. Because even when they get the person in office or the type of quote-unquote direction they want, the type of laws they want passed, the policies. People that are happy with deportation, then they're upset with people that are upset about it. You know, it's. Size those people for not wanting to see your point of view. Oh, they're just liberal Nancys with their tail tucked in between their cooch. And you're just like, all right, man. So what do you want? If you really look at the people that are really unhappy are the people that think about this stuff and act on it. in their daily life with politics and social direction. It's people that really think that having people that make their social, their personal social policies, their own social politics, their personality, those people are just the worst. Like, if you go around with a t-shirt of, you know, who you voted for and stickers and stuff like that, and you know you're going into a place just to be an attention seeker, which is ironic, you'll be wearing a t-shirt about who you voted for in a public place in an area that you probably know is going to get attention. That's fine. And you're the same ones that will shit on TikTokers for making videos, being, you know, all into themselves. It's like, you're literally all into yourself doing this thing, knowing you're going to get attention, but you hide behind the fact that, oh, you're speaking for something greater. Like, your opinion on it doesn't make the world any greater, more than the girl that's twerking the Hannah Montana by Ice Spice. All right. It's literally the same value you bring to society. Absolutely nothing. I'm not saying, like, you know, vote for who you want. Go for, you know, whatever is happening out here, whoever you want. Like, that's not really. County levels, like, you're lucky if you get like 20,000 votes. Like, I remember I saw some of this past, there's literally a county they got like 800 votes and that person won. It was like and the other person got like 500. No one gives a fuck, and that's a real, like, you need to put that same attention to that stuff. So I don't know, you know, what the fuck do I know? I don't vote. Like, raises a, you know, alien antenna to me. Now, his friend, like, they had a fall because Lil Yachty just basically wanted to sun him on their show. And so I'm like, no, without me, there is no, you know, that whole thing. Like, oh, I'm the one with money. I'm the friend with means. I'm the one putting you on. And the second you hear that from someone that's quote unquote trying to help you, that are trying to use a platform or putting you on, and they start talking like that to you, you need to automatically just be like, you know what, man? I'm good. And be fine with that. Because the second they don't have that power over you, then they really have nothing they can say to you. I mean, they could belittle you and whatnot. But once someone is in that mindset of, I put you on, oh, without me, there's no this, all this shit, like, that's when you gotta just, that's when his friend should be like, hey, man, fuck that. You can have this shit. I'll figure this shit out myself. This is something, you know, I appreciate what you've done and everything like that, but I'm not sitting here begging you for nothing. Like, fuck that. But we live in this culture where it's, if you help someone, you're in this powerful position to kind of be a dick or a bully. And we empower that. And then it's always these online trolls that all someone to be business. Like, hey, you know, sometimes in business, you know, you just got to be harsh and tell your friends how it is. It's like, bro, you don't have business to tell your friends what it is. It is what it is. I hate when people are sitting here talking about business and they don't, and they have a negative credit limit. I don't want to hear it. You know, you don't have the business to talk about business. And not everything that accumulates money is a business. You know, people need to stop. It's just this big umbrella. Everyone wants a business. Everyone wants to feel like the self-entrepreneur. Like, not everything is business opportunity. And, you know, that's one of the things you got to be careful of. When one of the people in the friends group, you know, exceeds from a outsider perspective. You start kind of feeding into your own shit. And instead of using that power for good to put people on in a good way and not, hey, if things don't work, if you start like, hey, you know what, man? Like, if you're someone who has that power, you just be like, hey, you know what? I just wanted to help you out, put you on. I'm not going to put you on blast or nothing, but you know, if you don't take this as serious, if you don't appreciate what I'm doing here, then it's good if we just don't do it. But it should still be a collaborative effort, right? But someone should never feel like just because you do something for them, they gotta, you know, get on their knees and put your wiener in their mouth all the time. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really how you build a good, healthy relationship. Well, at least not in business, you know what I mean? but nah. It's just odd to me that we have a... Lil Yachty is a great example of, look, success from a young age. All But, you know, he's made music over time and stuff, and he's had one of the longer careers, and it shows that development can happen. Like, 21 went from saying 21 over and over again, and the dude, like, is actually now, like, really damn good. Like, where it's appealing to a mainstream, and it's not mumble rap. It doesn't sound like he's just sipping out of a cup like, you know, he was in the Freshman Cypher. Now, working with Drake, I'm sure Drake had a few ghostwriting points for him. But you can just see the development. And I don't listen to a whole lot of 21 music, but you hear features, and especially this recent feature he did with Central C. You know, it was pretty. It was like, oh, damn. Like, there was definitely a, like, oh, that is, like, a really good collab, you know. But, yeah. I think I'm going to end the pod there. But yeah, that was episode 327 of the Off Me Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. Don't forget to like, follow, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Most important, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to suck some titties. Yeah, have a great day, morning, night, evening. Meep, meep.